Inspire Sound, a podcast dedicated to the Rathbones Inspire community, where we share knowledge, insight, advice, and experience from entrepreneurs and from investors. I'm Paola Cuneo. I lead on the entrepreneurial engagement at Rathbones. This is part two of my conversation with Anastasia Elfimova, the head of origination at AG Capital. I hope you enjoy. Let's talk a little bit when you're acquiring companies on behalf of your portfolio. Do you have specific criteria then when you look at an acquisition?
So we have a very active, large portfolio where I'm proud to say that our companies last year have done a whopping 324 acquisitions. Because it's a large number. It's driven mainly by our large consolidators, investments out of a Saturn fund like Visma, which is an ERP business in the Nordics that acquires a lot of companies. But even our smaller companies, almost always M&A is a very attractive way to grow quicker, to expand in new geographies, in new products or verticals. So we encourage our companies to do that. And it's usually it's quite specific, you know, what we're looking for. It's driven by what is the current product portfolio of the business, what are the attractive spots to expand into, and then very specifically we'll do the research and then try to approach those companies.
Excellent. So we talk a lot about how to get the deal done and the timing and how to find you. But what are the factors that can actually be showstopper for a deal?
It's a very good question, Paolo, because sadly, a lot of deals die. You know, obviously, as an investor, we would rather finish every investment that we start evaluating because, you know, when a deal dies, it's a time and energy that's lost and it's very frustrating. So we are always trying to find ways creatively to make a deal happen. In terms of what happens when most often when a deal does not complete, I'd say is when there is a misalignment between what the sellers kind of initially marketed or presented and hence their valuation expectations with what then investors discover when they do further diligence. And, you know, when the investors don't quite buy into the plan that was presented. For example, if a company is going to speak to investors, or maybe they have an advisor who is kind of chatting to the various parties about a potential transaction, trying to make investors excited, maybe presenting future plans in a very attractive light, which one would do, you know, it's normal. And then if investors start forming a certain view about the company without yet having the detailed information. And then usually financial information and KPIs follows at the next stage of the process. And then we would start the very detailed due diligence. We go really in depth. We evaluate all the various KPIs. And then sometimes turns out that what we see doesn't actually quite align with what we've heard before. So, for example, when the product was pitched, it's very high quality, but then we find out actually there may be some development issues. When the company was believed to have a very sticky customer base, and then we find out there was actually more churn than we expected. These types of elements. And then in the worst case scenario, what happens is all of the investors suddenly decide, well, actually, the company is not quite what we thought, not quite what we've presented to our own investment committee. And at this kind of valuation, we're not simply able to complete the investment. And then, obviously, all parties are with an undesirable outcome where the sellers weren't able to find a partner and the funds weren't able to do the deal. So it's, of course, important to try your best to achieve the best possible outcome. But it's much better to have very solid, realistic forecasts that you present and very kind of pragmatic expectations for evaluation and potential deal so that then you can actually deliver this plan together with the investors in the future.
So be very transparent since the beginning. Don't set false expectations because you're going to get found out in the due diligence. So clearly the investor, one of the great, what investor deliver is the funding, is the money. But what else can the, an investor deliver to a company in addition to the fund?
So we have actually a very extensive group of operating professionals that are full-time HG employees that work with our portfolio companies on various projects and optimizing parts of the business. Everything from, for example, best pricing strategies to customer success. We have a team of data scientists that are helping our companies implement all the latest and greatest in generative AI and cybersecurity, which are kind of hot topics and quite valuable. So we're lucky that we have this very wide range of valuable resources for companies. Some other investors don't, but of course, I'd encourage you whenever you are talking to an investor and doing a diligence to see whether you know those investors would be able to help you with some of these practical things as opposed to kind of general strategic direction on board level, which is also very valuable.
So there's just more, there's loads more than capital when an investor invests in you. What happens when things go wrong? What is the best way to deal with investors when things go wrong? Because business can have challenges during the scale-up phase.
Of course, it's it's part of life, unfortunately. And even the best operators and the best founders sometimes encounter curveballs, right? Whether it's industry-wide or economy. When you get a financial investor on board, an important quality for us, an important element of the relationship will be predictability, right? So investors back a certain forecast and then they follow it. And, you know, it's very important for us to see that we somehow achieve those milestones. And so it's better, as you've said earlier, to be very transparent and anticipate anything that you think is going wrong and bring it up right away, because it's much easier usually to deal with issues earlier on, even if perhaps sometimes they are, not the best news that you might have to bring to the board, because that will then allow the team to reassess the forecast, find out what would be the ways to mitigate the issue, and again, help that relationship kind of thrive through the crisis period.
So that's also another value that investors can give to businesses is help when things go wrong. Can you talk us how your internal decision-making process work?
So we have an investment committee that's comprised of our senior partners that we talk to about every investment that we make. And we start talking to them quite early in the process when we have an interesting opportunity, a company that we like. And we start doing work also quite far ahead of any kind of concrete transaction because we want to get smart on the market. We already want to do all the outside-in diligence that we can based on publicly available information. And that hopefully gives us an edge when the actual process starts. And then we would go to the committee several times throughout the process as well as we get more information, as we get, learn more things about the company and the transaction starts to take shape. With us, it is this kind of collaborative approach. Board of very experienced investors who have done multiples of investments in the past and, could quite quickly see what could be potential risks or potential issues to address when we're contemplating a transaction.
So it's important for every founder when they work out their timing to also understand the internal decision-making process. And there's nothing wrong in asking the open question, because every company might have a different, every fund might have a different decision-making process. So a founder can ask the question, how does yours work? So one can set their expectations since the outset.
That's right. But also be prepared to the fact that no deal and no deal process is the same as the other.
Good.
Sometimes yes. There could be pauses, sometimes there could be unexpected elements. And so there's never a quite, a mathematically structured way where once the decision is made and it's made.
Now, I'm privileged because I know there are many, many amazing female investors like yourself out there. But it would be great to hear from you, your take on investing into female-led businesses?
Think about asking the question. Obviously, it is unfortunately somewhere where we have to do more work to hopefully see more females as great leaders and founders, because, you know, numbers-wise, right now, we're a little bit behind. But at HG, we're very passionate about the question, you know, both on hiring, and we're eager to hire women into the firm, but also very fortunate to claim that two of our largest software businesses that are investments in our Saturn fund actually led by female CEOs. So one is Visman, which is our portfolio company for over 15 years now. It does over 50 acquisitions per year, and that is led by a lady. Iris in the UK, you know, is also led by a lady. So, you know, I think that's just fantastic. And those are software businesses where, again, you just tend to have fewer females in the sector than some others.
And maybe that's the issue, is to find in the right businesses in the right sectors which are investable. Anastasia, thank you so much for your time, for the invaluable advice, suggestions, insight into this. Really, thank you so much, and see you soon.
It's been a pleasure, Paola. Thank you.
Look out for more podcast episodes and for thought leadership articles dedicated to the Inspire community in the next few months. But for now, thank you for listening.